The chairperson, Mr. Paul Sadule, has given an apology. So I'm just going to facilitate the nomination of an acting chairperson for the meeting. In accordance to Rule 130 of the National Assembly, which says that we can nominate an acting chairperson. So I'm going to call for a nomination for an acting chairperson for the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. I wish to nominate the name of Honorable Emmy Fabaza.
Thank you, Emmy. Anybody seconding that? Alright, then I will hand over to Honorable Fabaza to take the
morning to receive a briefing from the PSB in relation to the media and camera. But before we go straight into the subject of the day, let me just see if there are any apologies. Apologies from the honorable members. And if there aren't any apologies from the delegation from the PSC. I have apologies before me from the Honorable Nkwama from the UPM, Honorable Gatti from the EFF, Honorable Manana from the ANP, and of course the Honorable Chairperson from Shatile has been said. So, must we accept those apologies?
Agree.
Accepted. Thank you very much. Any apologies from the chair?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. On our side, we would like to apologize on behalf of our newly appointed Deputy Chair and Acting Chair, Advocate Suzanne, who couldn't be here this morning because of prior commitments at the Constitutional Court.
Thank you. Yes, Honourable Member.
Honourable Chairperson, it was mentioned at one of our previous meetings that the parties of those members that are continued not attending will be approached. I believe that we should approach them just to find out if I understand they can have apologies, but perhaps they should look for a replacement if that person is not attending.
Okay. We'll look into that and report back to the committee. We'll ask each other to follow up on that. Because yes, indeed, there are members who have continually submitted operations. But we do know that Honorable Manana has had an operation, and that's why she's not been around in the past 2 days or so. Let me then hand over to the GST team, so that we can then continue with the subject. The other members present here are also welcome. I think I see a gentleman who we have seen quite often. I think you're from PMG. Yes. Any other person from National Treasury? Yes, the National Treasury and Eric. Yes, sir. Thank you. Who else here? Tom? Tom. Oh, thank you very much. Tom? Tom? Okay, thank you. All right. At some point we will allow Treasury to make comments if you so wish after the presentation.
Parliamentary budget office. Parliamentary budget office.
We will ask you too if yes, at some point to make comments if you so wish as well. Thank you very much. And of course, members of staff, you are all welcome. The special secretary. Thank you.
Honorable members, we appreciate this opportunity. Please allow me to introduce the delegation from the TNC. On my immediate left is Commissioner Luis Zani, who is one of the five commissioners based at the National Office and one of the 14 commissioners in the Public Service Commission. I am Commissioner Zemande. I also am based at the National Office. With us, we have two officials who come to assist us. On my immediate right is one of the managers who are in the area of monitoring and evaluation, Carmen, the name of that. And then we have Tio Guarda, who is one of the officials who supports us in our parliamentary work. Without much further ado, we would like to take the opportunity to thank the committee again for inviting us always at this time. And please invite us, chairman and honorable members, at the beginning, just to restate our mandate. But what we're going to focus on this morning, in the context of the request from the committee, we will briefly introduce our presentation, share with you what we're going to be focusing on, and then share our overall assessment of the 2014 NTBTF, including MBET, share some of our thoughts on the leadership and management practices, and how we see this relating to the discussion at hand, talk to the government and effective and efficient performance within the public service, and we will also just make our concluding remarks in all of these regards. Just as a way of introduction, if you could just allow us to restate our mandate, I know that we are talking to this very august house that drafted the very constitution on the basis of which we are offended, but it does help just to restate as a kind of a framework and a context within which we are sharing with the committee our information. As the PSC, we are accountable to the National Assembly and interact with Parliament and provincial legislators regularly, reporting on our activities and performing the function as required by Section Act 194(e) and 1966 of the Constitution. Our main objective is to provide effective technical oversight of the public service nationally and provincially. And to this end, we as a PSC conduct evidence-based research, monitoring and evaluation involving government and collating qualitative information which legislators and executives can use in their respective roles. We are a established to promote constitutional values. If you could just go back to the constitutional values, go back to the constitutional values. We are established to monitor and evaluate the public service on the basis of those values. We use those to investigate the application of personal and public administration practices, investigate grievances of employees, monitor and investigate adherence to applicable procedures in the public service, and advise provincial government or state regarding these practices accordingly. We just restate in this, Honorable Chair and members, just so that when you look at the information that we have provided to your good self, it is guided by the areas of our expertise. We've learned valuably so in the process of the recent court case where one, Mr. Dixon, who was a hydrologist, was offering certain expertise information, and the court just asked, if you are a hydrologist, then how come you are telling us about sound? So we are just putting the court at correct when you look at the letter where you can see, asked us to give some broad information that is outside our mandate. We have tried to veer very closely to our area of knowledge. What the committee has asked us then is to give an overall assessment of the 2014 NTDF, an assessment on the strategies available to significantly improve management practices in the public service through significant improvement in the impact goals in the medium term, comment on what can be done to improve governance and effective and efficient performance within the public service. For this purpose, we have used data from annual reports, used data that's available from our own tools that we've established through research, some information from the National Treasury, Presidency, particularly BPME, CSA, and BTSA. RACA in this presentation, we will focus as a way of a framework and in the following departments in accordance with the five priorities of government. We're doing this because we believe that if we at least use some kind of framework, it will be useful for the committee in doing its organized work. We are focused on this department to establish trends. As it has, we have reported to SCOA on these departments over the period of 3 years. These departments play a significant role in the achievement of overall government priorities. In giving the overall assessment, with the call of the reduced public spending, doing more with less, it is vital. It's important for the public service to focus on smarter planning. This should be supported by improved reporting to provide a platform for departments to show how additional resources contribute to improved performance and service delivery. The need for joint and integrated planning to achieve the National Development Plan milestones cannot be emphasized. And in respect of this, we appreciate the development with the Operation Partnership, which is really beginning to implement this understanding of integrated learning and delivery. This is enforced by the need identified by the Ministry of Finance for better alignment and coordination across government, which has the potential to improve program effectiveness without requiring additional resources. The reality, though, that in the next 2 to 3 years, is that the budget will inform planning. Therefore, the public service should look, in our view, into introducing the costing of implementation of annual performance plans, similar to the initial decision to cost all legislation before implementation. continuing with the overall assessment, we believe that the ongoing neglect or the appropriate management action in cases of poor performance needs to be reviewed. As recommended last year, the continuous and random scrutiny by Parliament of each and every institution's performance against plan and an assessment of their capability to deliver results is required. This should start with the presidency that should ensure that sectoral annual performance plans are well integrated and clearly articulate how priority policies will be implemented. Furthermore, as stated before, it will require support to Parliament to analyze and interpret annual reports. Annual reports are currently not always user-friendly for this purpose. Most importantly, we need to ask whether the division of the national appropriation in terms of national, provincial and local government deals adequately with the call for improved performance and better service delivery. We try, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, just to provide a framework for the committee in terms of the Management of Performance Assessment Tool, MPEP, and the call, and attempt to show the committee how this has progressively improved, starting way back with 2013 results. The MPEP has succeeded in creating awareness and commitment to improving management performance. Not as some people think that it only focuses on compliance. Compliance is the foundation for improving management performance. You will see starting way back 11, 12, 13, and now that there have been significant areas of compliance. Improvement of compliance. Just a summary of significant findings from MPEP as requested by the committee. Across all the MPEP standards measured in 2013, 50% of the national and provincial department boards are compliant at level 3, of which 42% and 20% overall are at level 4. Why KPA 1, which is Key Performance Area 1, which is Strategic Management, and Key Performance Area 2, Governance Accountability, has compliance levels of 69% and 58% respectively. KPA 3, Human Resources Management, and KPA 4, Financial Management, were at 34% and 56% respectively. I guess the committee will take note of this. This is the case for the three standards within the strategic plan in KPA, where the compliance for strategic plan is 90% to below 60% for annual performance plan and monitoring and evaluation. This suggests it is easier for departments to complete the planning template and link these to feasible implementation strategies and performance targets. Hence, our underlying at the beginning, the importance of focusing on planning going forward in the context of stringent budgetary constraints. We would like, Chairperson, to then focus on the critical area of leadership and management practices as you requested us. For this, I would like to hand over to Commissioner Lulu Sizani, who is going to take us through this important area of our information that we need to share with the committee. Commissioner Sizani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. To continue with the presentation, Commissioner demanded, speaking from the previous slide of MPEP 4, she highlighted some significant findings from the MPEP talking on KPA 3, which includes human resource management. I'm going to talk particularly on that.
and expand more on what the Public Service Commission has done, but to get a combined of departments in that regard. And it's under the heading of leadership, human resource practices, and which includes issues of labor relations in this. We have conducted studies, various studies, and we issued 5 reports in this financial year. These reports were actually meant for the orientation of the new administration, so that when ministers come in, they know exactly what to expect and what we will in future monitor from them. One of these 5 reports that I indicated in the slide today, it's an old report of 2012, which was about the report on the effect of the turnover rate of health care of departments on the performance of departments, the impact on the performance of departments. Although it was an old report, we felt that we should include it so that the new administration can take note of the findings of the Public Service Commission on the effects of the turnover rate of HOD. But the first report that we made, a long list of recommendations, is the first one, which looks at an assessment of the implementation of the policy framework on the appointment of ministerial staff in national and provincial departments. The reason why we conducted a study in that area is that we observed that there are challenges regarding compliance with the legislative framework and prescripts of government in that regard. In some cases, ministerial staff are appointed, sometimes without following process, and in cases where processes are followed, so they don't check the competences of the people that they employ. So we decided to come up with a report like that. And the second one was the report on the delegation framework. And this is a compliance issue, honorable members, as you are aware that in terms of Section 3 of the Public Service Act, ministers are supposed to delegate those duties that are empowered given to them by law, because they cannot do anything, so that everything, so the HOD should actually exercise some of the delegations. Even in terms of the PSMA, accounting officers should delegate the work to other officials in the department. So we're checking whether they are doing this, because it is a compliance issue. And another one was a very important report, because although it was not a full report, it was just a fact sheet, we wanted to check the reasons why there are blockages in filling of vacancies in the health service. Honorable members, you will notice that if you look at government departments, most of them are sitting with a huge vacancy list in their departments. They are not filling vacancies, and we discovered that there might be challenges. And it actually affects their budget, it affects the service delivery in their departments, because if they are not filling funded posts, so those budgets will be sitting there, they will not be utilized, but in the end, that will impact on service delivery, because there will be nobody to do the work. So we were concerned, because even the president has actually spoken on this issue, he was concerned that why departments are not filling vacancies. And with the high rate of unemployment in the country, again, it is a concern that departments can fit with vacancies and not fill them. So we wanted to know. So we also did a guide on governance practices for executing authorities and heads of departments. We realized the fact that when new ministers came in, most of them were members of parliament. They were not actually ministers, some of them before. So they would need some sort of orientation of what is that is expected from them. Before we can move in and say, Minister, you haven't done this and that and that, but we needed to inform them upfront that this is what we expect from you as the Minister, and this is what we will be monitoring at the Public Service Commission. We also did roundtable discussions where we facilitated a discussion around the issues of state and human resources, grievances and discipline. Because on grievances, we discovered that the departments are not investigating the grievances of officials. and we are sitting with a bag of grievances coming from officials from department, and the previous procedure suggests that they need to investigate a grievance. It can only be referred to the public service commission if the employee is not satisfied with the decision of the employer. But in most cases, you would find employees refer those grievances to the public service commission without being investigated. Of course, in terms of Rule S9 of the grievance procedure, they are allowed to do that. But we wanted to know why. Why are they always referring without department investigating? So there are findings in that regard which show a level of non-compliance from a department. On this issue, we also discovered that sometimes, remember, we remember that we had a previous report that we issued, although it was not included in this report, where you would find that sometimes sanctions do not really match the offense. Somebody stealing huge sums of money from the state would be disciplined and really get a flag on the wrist, while somebody who has driven a car illegally would sometimes be fired, things like that. I'm just making an example. So we also discovered that issues of the implementation of ill health, where people get sick, and sometimes they need to be boarded from the public service. There are challenges around that because departments most of the time they use the health risk officers, and they take the recommendation of health risk officers and implement those decisions without actually investigating whether the person is really sick and needs to be boarded. Just to share, honorable members, that one of the investigations that we did when we asked to check the abuse of leave, especially in the police service, we discovered that some of the police officers that apply to be boarded on medical grounds are really people that could not work anymore, but those investigations would be declined. Like a police officer who's short and paralyzed, short on duty for that matter, but paralyzed, but when applying for ill health return, the application would be declined. And certainly so, sometimes that person would die after the application was not approved. Those are the things that we discovered as we were doing the investigation, which is also, honorable member, a point of a non-compliance from the department, because they are supposed to investigate. They can't just take a recommendation from the health service officers without actually satisfying themselves whether the person is sick or not. Another thing was the issue of the occupational specific dispensation, the OSD. It was really a problem because some departments could not even fill vacancies because these OSDs were not budgeted for by departments. So they had to take money that was meant for primary schools to fund the OSDs. All these OSDs were implemented without putting a budget for them. We also came up with key findings on the observations made in the issue of instability at the HOD level negatively impacted on the working relationship with EAs and HODs on the achievement of the department objectives. And I think the last administration was the worst, as you will know, members. We had about 8 HODs that were sitting in one department, which were cut out of their department for their reasons. So that is why we actually put this as one of the findings. Although elections have generally had a negative impact on the turnover rate, this has so far not been the case in 2014, because the should report on the present. Because when the new administration came, we expected to see other issues moving out, but this was not the case this time. I think we reported something that is very positive. Maybe the members will actually acknowledge that even so, when we look at all the departments, except for those whose contracts will actually end, but we don't have the casualties that we had as we had last time, where 8 HODs were out of their departments for their residents. Stability at the HOD level will enhance departmental performance, and that's our view. Ensure institutional memory, good staff morale, and maintain relations with key stakeholders and inspire public confidence. I move to the last the second slide, where we said with this fight that happening between ECOBs and EA, there should be a more classification of EA, and ECOBs must actually make sure that in areas where they are actually in charge of, like the PSLD, they need to have some discussion with their ministers, because it's actually a power struggle, because ministers, in terms of the Public Service Act, have power to appoint when they do not have money within their power to appoint the money seat with the HOP. So they are fighting about that. So that's the finding that we came up with. But we're saying they need to sit down and actually discuss this issue, because at the end of the day, it's the minister who has the overall accountability of what happened in the department. Whether he has power over the PSME powers or not, but the minister is the one who's supposed to deliver. The main purpose of the blockages, as I move forward in this resolution, were actually identified by the department themselves. But when we were speaking to the department, we wanted to find out from them, why are you not killing vegans? And they gave us a whole long list of things, which the members, when you read our report, you will be able to see all those things. Some of the things, the issue of delegations, where officials will say the delegations are sitting with the MEC or are sitting with the minister, that is why we are not speaking the intensive speedily. Issues of vetting, as members know that there is a national vetting strategy in the public service, and the departments are not supposed to fill vacancies without first vetting the people that they employ. In some cases, they cut corners because they want to fill vacancies easily or speedily, so they don't vet the people. And the implications is that if you don't vet beforehand and something comes out after you have appointed the person, there is no way you can just fire the person. You need to follow the processes, especially in the law. And in terms of Section 17 of the Land Services Act, you need to take that person on process. You can't just fire the person. So that's why they were saying to us, it is difficult to just be in a vacant. And they don't have capacity within their HR. Sometimes it's difficult to speed up the process. And issues of sacral verification, of qualifications, which is a critical issue again. And we're not suggesting that they should just take a person without tech verifying the qualifications. But some people really misrepresent themselves in the area of qualifications. That's why it needs to be verified before the person is appointed. Most departments are unable to comply with the strategy to reduce the recruitment period and the vacancy rate in the public service. Because of these many other challenges in implementation of the occupational specific dissemination in some sectors, we observed also that there is a level of non-compliance with the legislative framework that governs the delegation of power. This is compounded by the fact that human resource powers are not as delegated to the Director General as they should. And in especially in provinces, I think that's where this issue of non-delegation is happening. A legislative-based compliance policy framework or ministry, we suggested that DPSA should develop it, measures to be put in place to ensure that the capacity of the state is strengthened by making succession planning compulsory, and so that we don't have to get people outside the department all the time. So when promotion levels are coming up, perhaps if they have a successive learning, people internally can be, you know, can be promoted, and that could actually assist people to stay longer in departments than what it is now, where people are really moving. The turnover rate is very high. They're moving from one department to the other, leaving vacancies, even though vacancies are still within the public service fight. All the time departments are advertising, all the time, because people are moving out, going to other sister departments. The conflict resulting from the PSMA and Public Service Act in terms of human resource and financial powers and responsibilities, I think it's an area that should be addressed. All departments actually, we believe that they should review their delegations in terms of the framework issued by the PSA and National Federal. And in some cases, you find that this is not happening in most departments. We also, there needs to be an improvement on the performance management and development system.
because the non-delivery of department sometimes is caused by the fact that civil servants themselves are not delivering. And the issue of the personal correct that they sign is very weak. In some departments you find the officers not having signed their personal contracts. And in those personal contracts it is where a department actually tell us what needs to be achieved. But if they don't even sign those contracts, it's difficult to make sure that a service delivery gets money. We also discovered that there is a need for legislative intervention to address the issue of potential conflict between EAs and EGs based on different roles given by the KMSA and Public Service Act. And some of our recommendations, we see that in the MDP, our government is beginning to address those things, because our recommendations are really taken seriously, because they are trying to put an mechanism where the reporting lines of AODs will now shift from directly to EA to the head of government that we have been appointed. And we see that that recommendation is taken up, because it's clear it's the spacing of the NDP. The DPSA needs also to critically assess the outcome of the implementation of the occupation cessation with the intention to review the tools as a recruitment and retention strategy. Departments were saying also they must assess the skills gaps and requirements of those on their establishment. This must be done through the specific reference to posts that have been delegated authorities. Given the importance of human resource management, which pivotally to affect public administration and service delivery, it is essential that grievances are well managed. Because there is no way that department can deliver when they have grieving or employees whose grievances have not been addressed. Well, those people will not deliver because they are not happy. And they feel unhappy and not even not doing their jobs properly. And at the same time, departments would still and not address the grievances within the prescribed period. The inability of departments to comply with the time frames in which a grievance should be resolved continues to hamper the timely resolution of grievances in the public service. And we also know that sometimes there is no capacity within those departments to address the grievances of employees. And I think that maybe they need to come up with mechanisms where they can actually ask the DPSA to assist them, or even come up with proposals where the public service commission can intervene at an earlier stage, of course, with interviews. Poor record management and subsequent unavailability of documents on decision-making processes also impact negatively on the resolution of grievances. And these are our findings, Honorable Chair and members, and I will hand over to Commissioner Dumanis to continue the presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner Elby. Before I do so, I will ask that Chairperson, you indulge us just to talk very quickly to the issues of governance as you have requested us to. Don't be alarmed, Honourable Members. We won't go line by line, but there are many graphs and other things. We just talk to those so that we leave you with the details of information to be able to use that for oversight purposes. I would ask Amen just to quickly talk to the area of government before we conclude.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning, Honourable Members. The two areas that I will be covering is governance, and the final area is effective and efficient performance. In terms of governance, what it basically is, we've looked at the 12 departments that have been identified and listed in the beginning of the presentation, and really trying to understand the indicators that as it relates to the key performance areas that are measured in MPEC, as well as the work that is basically done by the Commission in terms of how we measure governance and accountability in the different departments. In terms of governance, we basically looked at expenditure versus actual achievement of targets, the quality of performance information, which is generally an assessment that we define within the Auditor General's report, relating to rates, the issues that were highlighted there, especially the emphasis placed in terms of the statement of what will be happening in terms of high vacancy rates and improvements of those going forward in the next 2 years. The filing of performance agreements, which is critical in terms of measuring how we are doing as a department, but also accountability in terms of the HIPAA department and how they are achieving the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and the Financial Disclosure Framework. Initially, we would have included the financial misconduct. Please note that the process for submission by the departments in the provinces was that all the EAs and HODs need to sign the findings of the PAC, because we've been having challenges in terms of figures changing, documents getting lost or misplaced. So we really wanted to make sure that what we present to you has been approved by the internal processes. The first two slides, in terms of the expenditure versus the performance, is basically just looking at the last 3 years, the 12 departments that have been indicated. If you look at the performance in terms of 2013-14, you can generally see we try to color-code it, so that's basically a snapshot. You can see there's generally an improvement in terms of the percentage performance targets achieved in the 2013-14 financial year. What we've done is we've taken a few of the departments as per the quiz that has really improved in terms of the program performance, but also a department that has significantly declined in terms of performance. In the two areas there, the two departments are COCTA and Department of Health. As you could see there, if you look at COCTA, there's a note of the increase in achievement. Previously from a 43% to a 70%. Out of the 12 departments, 11 of the departments' performance increased over the past financial year, and Public Works obtained an unqualified audit opinion from a disclaimer in 2011-12 and a qualified audit in 2012-13. Only three of the departments performed below 60%, which is Department of Health, Public Works, and Rural Development and Land Reform. An area that we would really like to flag for the members is that this is also not comparing apples with apples, because you have departments that literally have 125 in performance indicators versus a department that only has 30 for a financial year. The question is, you know, do we really need 125? Is it really speaking to the critical areas of performance that we could be focusing on? And that is a challenge that FA has picked up in terms of strategic planning. People do not know how to identify realistic, attainable, manageable indicators in terms of only one performance year. The next two slides is basically just showing the performance improvement for COCTA, which you can visibly see in terms of the color coding for the two financial years. The improvement of performance, and this is basically as it reflects in the annual report 2013-14, and can really be attributed to smarter planning. You can visibly see the difference in the way that the strategic plans and annual performance plans have been developed, as well as the reporting in the annual report. The department revised the number of planned targets for the financial year, making the achievement even more attainable and more realistic. The annual performance plan should reflect a priority target for a financial year. Therefore, the main question should be, what can be achieved within the next year based on the current performance? We've also picked up that especially in the planning of annual performance plans, you can see that there's a trend in terms of achievement, but it definitely does not inform how we need to improve for the next. So if we have achieved a 50%, then the projection would be at 80%. And you can't see based on what that prediction is. Then we have Department of Health. Again, looking at the colors for the two financial years, you can see the decline in terms of 2013-14, specifically in Program 2, which is health insurance, the health planning, Program 3, which is HIV/AIDS, TB, maternal child, and women health, which is critical areas as a priority for government, as well as Program 4, primary health care services. Those things that affect the citizens in terms of service delivery. And you can clearly see, if you look at the increase of public purchase, where the issues basically come from. The National Credit Framework for Managing Program Performance Information requires that institutions should have appropriate systems to collect, verify and store performance information to validate the accuracy of this information. In the case of the Department of Health, we have areas where there is data not available
data was not available for the financial year. That cannot be acceptable. Every indicator has been developed or established and placed into an annual report. Systems need to be put in place in terms of how we're going to measure and monitor our achievements against that target. Then we move to the level of expenditure for 2014-15 at August 2014. You can there see that most of the departments there are spending below the norm, and the norm is 41.66%. But you also have the Department of Public Works, Basic Education, Agriculture, and Economic Development that it has an expenditure above the norm. Obviously, we need to make sure that there's a proper balance in terms of our achievements, but there is also of concern is understanding. For example, priority area like human settlement, which is underspending at 31%, and then BTI as well, underspending at 32%. The next slide is the quality of performance information. As I indicated when we look at the performance of the health department, there seems to be an increase in terms of the achievement of our performance targets. However, what is a concern, especially for 2013 and 2014, is that this information, according to the Auditor General, is not seen as useful or reliable. So it doesn't mean we tick off that we've achieved the certain target if the target is actually saying nothing in terms of our performance or service delivery. You can definitely look at the areas of the Department of Concern, being Agriculture, Basic Education, and Proctor, where generally there is a finding in terms of saying that the information is not useful, the information is not reliable. So it's been discredited. There's an imbalance in terms of percentage achieved if we look at this information. I've already done the analysis. The next slide is the vacancy rate, where we have Department of Economic Development, Human Settlement, Public Works, and Rural Development, which have a very high vacancy rate and will be affected by the decision to freeze the unfunded the funded vacancy. Of concern is that these departments have vacancies in critical occupations that impact on integrated housing and transport programs and the building of capacity within the priority sector. It's really an area that we really need to do a little bit more investigation, especially with the decision to freeze the funded vacancies in some areas. The next slide is the filing of the performance agreements of the department. There has been a significant decline on compliance in terms of submission to the public service from the SOGs. It's generally due on the 30th of June of each year, and a mere 5%, which is only 3 of the 12 departments listed, have submitted. In comparison with the previous year, it was only also just a mere 40%. We can clearly look at who are the areas, who are the departments that have not complied in terms of submission. National Anti-Corruption Hotline, as already indicated, it's an area that we feel definitely needs to be addressed and also highlighted in the policy statement document. If you look at the findings generally, if you look at the feedback, percentage feedback received from the department, as well as the closure rate, it is, we're not doing so well. And it raises the doubt on whether the strategy on minimum anti-corruption capacity is working or whether we need to centralize the capacity which would create a greater opportunity for us to deal with these corruption cases. If you look there, we've got in the previous year only 3 departments achieved above 30% closure rate. If there was an increase in the overall closure rate from 32% of selected departments in 2013 to 34% in 2014. Departments are again of concern pertaining to the feedback rate is human settlement, health and agriculture, those 3 departments. We really need to understand what the challenges are. The next 2 slides is basically providing information in terms of the financial disclosure framework. All members of senior management are required to disclose the particular of all registrable interest, or whether also need to submit the information by no later 30 April of each month. Each year. We've clarified that also, and the area of concern which we have highlighted is the Department of Health. If you go to the next slide, we've got the list of the different departments. However, we should note that with the introduction of the e-disclosure system, the department has indicated that they've submitted through the system 19 SES members' information on the system. This is it. We also scrutinize this information, so if there's follow-up required, we do that. With the system, you don't have any liaisons. Noteworthy is Department of Labor that achieved 100% compliance rate in 2014 after maintaining a zero compliance rate for the last 2 years. During 2014, there was improvement in compliance in the Department of Basic Education and Rural Development and Land Reform. However, Economic Development, Justice and Constitutional Development, Public Works, which achieved 100% compliance in 2013, did not manage to maintain that. But as a closure summary for the governance section, even though the relation between active targets and expenditure is not a direct one, overall there seems to be an improvement in the achievement of the targets for the selected sub-national department. However, this could be attributed to a few new indicators where the department did not first establish a baseline of performance. What we picked up in some of the annual performance plans is that a lot of departments have included a lot of new indicators. But instead of using the first year as a process to establish a baseline for projection in the outer years, they have just basically said we will achieve this without a specific target percentage, and then if they reach a 30%, they mark it as achieved target. But there's no target in terms of the annual achievement when you look at the annual performance plan. The management of performance information is an essential basis for improving performance and speaks to the reliability of the information. It's very clear if you look at the latest annual performance plans, and it already indicated people have learned how to manipulate the reporting templates that have been provided. So they know how to hide things that they don't want you to see, and if you go a little bit deeper into the information and you try to compare previous years, it clearly shows how they are manipulating the system. And that's why we are picking up the challenge in terms of the translating the strategic plan into annual performance plan, because that's where the actual work begins, in terms of using your brain cells and making sure that there's something that is something that can be measured, and in most cases it is not. The general lack of compliance management and support performance management processes by the EA and the HREs have negative impact on performance and ultimately service delivery. For instance, how and what is measured if performance agreements are not in place? The idea is that from HRD level, the performance agreements need to be fed into the relevant annual plans or operational plans of the departments, and clearly that is not happening. The challenges can only be dealt with if the foundation for strategic planning is addressed. Identify and develop smart indicators which support management systems for performance information. In terms of the next area, effective and efficient performance, we look at the actual service delivery areas, starting with the service delivery process. Although we've picked up there is an increase in terms of service delivery and areas where we deliver services, the challenge is the quality of services that are being delivered. It is not just to say that we have so many early child development teams that if we are not able to deliver the services that those centers are supposed to deliver. The slide there is that the major service delivery process by year from 2004 up until August 2014 reflects an increase. Since the Field for 2014 project only reflects information up to August 2014, it may reach a new peak. So 2014 is a mere 9 months in comparison with the other years that are reflected. There is also a survey that's been done by State ESA that is released on an annual basis that looks at the quality, as I said, of service delivery, where they look at the quality and the satisfaction that customers have against public health care facilities, and it is measured against very satisfied, somewhat satisfied, inconclusive, and dissatisfied. You can see the different years as highlighted there. Then the next slide is the reason for increases in the number of protests. While performance had increased, it relates to the quality of services. We looked at the in the different provinces, the weakness or where people have said that the housing, the weakness of the roof, and that is included in the survey as well, in the areas as highlighted. The other area that is also concerned for people in terms of the housing is the weakness of the wall. And that's basically the indicator that we are measuring there. In terms of poverty, we look at the access to food over the last few years, starting 2002, which generally just shows how we are progressing the vulnerability to hunger and the access to food. Per household firstly and then per person. The next slide just further breaks it down into the different provinces, with the province northwest being an area of concern there. So. Then the next slide that we have is the unemployment rate for the different provinces. I mean, you can clearly see that there has been certain provinces, there's been an increase, Northern Cape stated in Western Cape, and then a decrease to Limpopo, Northwest and County. Also, work opportunities created by the EPWC in the priority sectors as highlighted there. Please just note that it's not really comparable because the last few years we're still counting it under 2014. Right. So if you look at the overall household service, the percentage of households that fully own the dwellings they inhabit increased slightly from 52.9% in 2002 to 61.4% in 2008 before declining in 2013. Department of Housing and Human Settlements have indicated that housing and the provision of water and basic services will remain a priority. But I think just in order for us to improve our performances, we really need to emphasize better strategic planning and translating of the strategic plan into an performance plan.
Chapter has been a long presentation. I won't delay by the concluding remarks. I'd like us to make three points. One, we see ourselves as a strategic partner to this committee to the extent that we have the constitutional responsibility to oversee a very critical element of what is needed to be able to deliver. There is oversight over the public service because public service is a very human intensive exercise. Constitutionally, we oversee and ensure that there are good management practices across the public service. Therefore, the information in terms of the state of the public service report really shows us that some of the things that cause difficulty in effective implementation are poor planning, poor indicator development when those plans are done, weak systems, weak technical capacities and poor management, and where it's been achieved by lack of appropriate management action to deal with cases of poor management, of poor performance. Secondly, Chairperson and honorable members, is one that in all the impact codes, there is one that's called lowest between 2 to 2.5 is in the area of human resource management, which means that it really requires constant oversight and constant support. We at the Public Service Commission, as we've been making all of these observations in terms of our work, we do not just point, we don't see ourselves as a traffic cop of the public service, but we go so far as to make concrete recommendations and, where necessary, directives in areas that need improving. It covers us that where we've made such recommendations, the executive has taken those very positively. For example, one of my colleagues was pointing to the area of our work of managing conflict. We made a proposal to the executive to say it is not going to help us if public servants do work with government. We need a law to stop this, and indeed they are pioneering that. We made a recommendation to say it doesn't help to give head of department 3-year contract because it contributes to the turnover. Indeed, they've moved away from that to 5 years contract. And lastly, in the area of managing anti-corruption, our role is to manage the anti-corruption hotline and ensure that the capacity within the department to manage anti-corruption. However, Chairperson, an area of interest of this committee might be to work with other committees just to make sure that the body that has the responsibility for anti-corruption in the system, that there's much more coordination and find a way of working together with the minimal resources. We do look forward to working with the committee and even outside this process of budget, because we believe we have lots of information, important information to share for the purposes of the committee's oversight. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the PSCT, for this relevant information. Members, let me allow you to pose questions, observations, areas of light.
Thank you, Chairperson. The report is a good report. It is lots of valuable information, although, and it's not a criticism, it was a little hard for me. but I'm not saying it that was bad, that actually I needed to think faster. Nevertheless, I will start with slide number 10. And the question I would like here is the data. The two areas specifically, namely, the first one is decent work and sustainable livelihoods, and then the other one regarding the fight against crime and corruption. Now, I see the details given there, and these are the priority areas. I noticed the small business was not covered in that as one of the areas, and as we know, or I know that in thriving economies that 90% of the economy is made up of 90% of small businesses, so I just noticed that wasn't analyzed. And then the other one, which is the last one, which is also important and what's causing this country lots of grief, is the area of crime and corruption. And again, I noticed the areas that were included in terms of analysis was the Chapter 9 institution was excluded from that one. So it's only deals with South African police and justice and constitutional development. Slide number 23. Now, I noticed that the benchmark used here, slide number 23, is the level, level of expenditure. The norm is for 1.66%. Now, this is a question why, minus, I would have believed that after 6 months your benchmark would be 50%. So it's for clarification. And then obviously, it's always a concern, and you know, we've received numerous reports from numerous in presentations, and you know, the underspending and the overspending is I don't think it's dealt with severely enough, because that's why it can be seen in the index, you know, the performance of the ESA department, which are not interested in submitting reports on their performances, and that is why you have these low and high and understanding. And obviously another issue that comes up from time to time is the lack of capacity. Now let me just throw something in here. If it's not always in addition to that, I have no doubt in my mind that is an issue. But what about lack of competence? Is that not also one of the issues that is the reason for this? Slide number 27. That's the governance issue, which, that would obviously be based on the comment that I've made now in the previous slide, is that the mere 23% of the selected level departments submitted their EAs. And again, you know, that is unacceptable. I understand we have some acting people, but still, I mean, the fact that it hasn't been submitted, I think some action really needs to be taken against those HOEs. You know, even if somebody's acting, I don't think it gives them a reason to not perform. I mean, if you're acting, fine, we understand that. But I mean, if you want to be given a permanent position, then you will perform so that you become permanent. And so, by using that as an excuse, it's for me, it's not acceptable. Slide number 47. Yeah. Okay, I just, those concluding remarks, I just want to agree and you know, see that that action needs to be taken, and I'm talking specifically about the last bullet point, the last few words of that sentence with Kofwa. Government needs to rethink strategy in dealing with corruption, and we need to take it serious. And my colleague to the right of me always says that we must get back the money, and I think we really need to look at doing this overnight and you know, to identify these perpetrators of this corruption and to let them pay for it. And then the last point I would like to make, another chairperson, is on slide number 48, but it is covered in one of the previous slides, but I saw there again the last one. Increase active housing, which is the main key focus, government is being seen by the kind of hustle. I just would like to know what is the reason for that? You know, if any reason has been found as to why there's a decrease in ownership of houses, of people that inhabit those houses, if any, because I mean, it's a substantial decrease from 61 to 55. Five. And yeah, thank you. That's all I have. How many would you
share with me? Followed by Honorable and Honorable Mansoura.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank you for the information I've given us. And Tita, I'd like to hear you take my remarks as critical of them, because I know you're reporting on the facts you find. It's not that I'm pointing a finger at you, but I'm raising issues of concern to myself or anything else. Right, starting slide 5, the last bullet point there, it appears to also conduct investigations and service delivery points as well as public hearings on property issues. I would like to give you a little detail on that, how exactly you went about conducting investigations and service delivery points. The sort of thing I have in mind is if you phone in advance today on Tuesday, if you come to do an investigation for municipality or whatever the case may be, obviously they have everything shipped out and ready for you when you arrive. But if you arrive unannounced, then you catch them in there normally the day, and I think you might find different results depending on how you actually do it. Public hearings, of course, are always useful things in this. So yes, I just wondered what the sort of numbers and so on were. On the next slide, and you make a point to regret to an assessment on how we go about improving management practices in the public services. Now, I I would agree that that's one of the major problems is lying to the management. And so I thank you for the fact that you focused on that area. My concern, my colleague to the right, spoke about the fact that small business enterprises were mentioned in the table on page 7. I would like to see something on water and sanitation. These are really key and fundamental issues that that department deals with. Issues of fundamental importance to those who are policy subs and also to the economy as a whole. Without water and sanitation, everything suffers. And yet there's no figures here on water and sanitation. So I would ask if you do the exercise again, see if you can. Now, a concern I have, and I'm afraid I have a number of, like, for some reason I have all of the slides are all number 68, but these comments may relate pretty much all of them. I like words that repeat themselves such as the following: needs to be revised, is required, should ensure, will be implemented. All of more. Should be, must review, should inform. Now, yes, these are recommendations you make. All these things should be happening. But for 20 years down the line, why haven't they ever agreed? Can you not address that issue? All these things you're recommending, of all the time, surely something should have been in place by now to make sure that these things were happening already. Why are we only now making these recommendations? Obviously because it's necessary to make them, because every time I read it should be, it seems to me that it's not happening. That's why it should be happening. It must be reviewed, means it hasn't been reviewed, etc., etc. I have a concern with that. What's been going on since things got going here? Has nobody been doing anything along the lines of this matter? Trying to get the management practices up and running. I had a particular concern on slide 11, where you inform us that human resource managers is at 34% on their impact scores. That's scary because, you know, in the private sector, you always have got your workforce, your primary assets. Without workers who are adequately remunerated and skewed and motivated, your business is worth nothing. And yet in public service, we seem to be very low on that level. Is any wonder that we're not delivering service properly if our human resource management only scores at 34%? I think that's a really cause for concern along. On slide, the first of those, or sorry, the second one, number 28, which is leadership, HR, and practice and labor relations 2. Roundtable discussions and facilitated deliberations and challenges around the state of human resources for your participants. You say these are not investigated, and maybe that's one of the reasons why things aren't happening, and then we will also hold that the sanctions don't reflect the seriousness of the offence, or often they don't overemphasize, sometimes underemphasize. Is it not here a case of where you expect the people to police themselves, you always have difficulties with the favoritism? You like Mr. A, but you don't like Mr. B. So if Mr. A does something wrong, he gets the tap on the back. If Mr. B does the same thing wrong, he gets fired for the same thing. Surely if we had some sort of standardization when it comes to this kind of thing, which you have to measure yourself. I just have across the board this concern that you police yourself is always a problem. Because you're inclined to be too lenient and practically done the carpet and look the other way. It's one of those human nature, I know, but we need to find a way around that, I think. Challenges I experience with implementation of the PMTS. I think we find this all over the place, and I think it relates back to the use. Whoever's contacting the PMDS, are they doing it for the right reason? Is it just used as a punitive tool, so you haven't been performing, and therefore you're not getting your performance bonus, or you're not getting your promotion, or are we actually using it as a bit of a mental tool? To say, you're falling short in these areas, what can we do to effectively improve your competence, and therefore improve your ability to score higher marks? My concern is just, what are we doing with that information? When we actually do conduct these things, what are we doing with information? We were told a story about an application for early retirement denied in the police. I think it's very much the case that, well, that's probably because whoever was applying for a little blunt by whoever was listening to the application of the dean or the attention, was clearly someone who can no longer do the job, must be allowed to resign. How can you force them to carry on the main category of doing them because they're shot, injured, etc.? It doesn't make sense. It needs to be investigated what is the cause of that. I found this particularly alarming, the last bullet point on leadership, agile and practices and labor relations number 5, which means poor equipment management and equipment unavailability documentation on decision making processes also impacts negatively on resolution of bureaucracy. Just referring back to what I said already, I think there's probably the same sort of reason why there's nothing there. It's been sold or it's been deleted or shredded because obviously you don't have the information getting out of the NGO or whatever. On that slide dealing with governance, I was also similar sort of concerned to my colleagues. When we say that there's like anyone in these for an example, agriculture, forestry and fisheries. Performance is 41%, percent spent 99.3%. But when I see that kind of relationship, it tells me there's something wrong here. Either the target setting was way off, and therefore there was no problem costing down the whatever they hoped to achieve, or there's some rampant corruption on the go that we're spending way too much money to achieve part of the goal. And again, I think part of the problem is, certainly in the municipality where I was at before, the municipality sets its own targets. So every department has their own target setting budget. It's not set by somebody outside. So it's very easy to set yourself easy targets. Or set yourself a literacy, possible targets to achieve because it looks good in you through your target setting. And often times you can't perform because you've either overestimated your ability or you've way underestimated your ability. And we had a situation where people were setting targets of attend 4 meetings a year in a particular time. That's very easy to set, attend 4 meetings a year, so you're going to get 100% every time. But if you have to achieve some result from those meetings, and that was rather than targets than just the attendance of the meeting, it changes the picture altogether. And I think a lot of this falls into those sort of cracks. So I just wondered about how relevant this information is, and can we investigate further where there's a huge discrepancy? What's the reason for that discrepancy? I think the same applies pretty much to all the aspects of governance. Once again, like I said, if you would like to see what the performance figures there were on the Department of Water and Sanitation, because it's not part of what you're looking at. The slide on slide 84, that information there in the top 3, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, basic education and culture. Quality of performance information where it's just really bad. It's finding it right away from it. And I just thought, well, it's something that could bother me a great deal. When you have a situation like that, whoever goes to do the investigation can't do the investigation, there's just no information we have. Now, I would like to know why that is. What's going on in that department that results in there being no information? Do they not keep records? Do they destroy the records they have? Are they not prepared to disclose to whoever's conducting the investigation? What's the reason for it? There must be something. Vacancy rates as well are obviously a concern, and it's something that ties back into the human resource management problem, I guess. Exactly, it's a better percentage of performance, and the vacancy rates should be so much better, I believe. When Professor Richard Levine gave a presentation earlier in the year on the performance agreements in the head of the department, we were told that, if I remember rightly, in 2013, not one head of the department had been assessed for performance. But it started almost in 2011, there were 18 of them in the debt, and it gradually just deteriorated to nothing. That was of huge concern to me, and I wondered again, what are we doing to try and ensure that every head of the department is assessed at least once a year, preferably twice a year, I would say, but at least once a year there must be some kind of performance analysis done. Otherwise, how do we know? They shouldn't be able to fall for this kind of performance. We don't know whether they're performing or not because no assessment is done. And it ties into this as well, where they don't involve people to make their performance clean. It's not rocket science, it's not hard to do. You sign the contract and you hand it in. Why don't they do it? If there's some reservation, don't they want to be bound by the terms of that agreement? Well, it's not that they shouldn't be doing the job. Do we have some kind of sanction in place that says that if you don't sign and deliver by that date, you're going to get notice and you're out there? I don't know what they want. Obviously, we need to be able to use a bit of a whip on them to get them through. Otherwise, how do you actually hold them to account? And I turn and say, well, there's no agreement between you and I, do what I like. So it's just a concern to me that I think really needs addressed here. Just a general comment. Sometimes percentages can give us a good picture, and I would appreciate if we had numbers of other percentages. And when it's only one person going to do something and he does it, that's 100% performance. When it looks good for 100%, there's only one person doing it, it doesn't sound so good. So we just have numbers as well, just as a comparison, so we could see how they relate to each other. Just a comment about the system is being manipulated. I think, again, this is a human thing, where once people know how to use the system, then they will do that. I feel that we get to a situation, it's almost like a boxing exercise. That you know what your targets are, and a lot of people are boxing specifically with that. It's not ideal, because then you're not getting the best result out of somebody. Is there some other way we could approach this? This sort of measurement system where there might be some kind of incentive for people to do more than just take the boxes. I don't know the difference, but I'm just asking, can we maybe investigate to find out if there's some kind of incentive we could use to get people to perform better, not just manipulate the system. Some houses were partially owned. I wasn't quite sure what was meant by that. I think it was a bond, and a bond being twice paid off, or is there some other description or definition you can give of being partially owned? And I think that's it. One question I had on slide 44. The last bullet point said, furthermore, the department provided 12,101 households with on-site sanitation in rural areas. Well, they also provided water. If it's just sanitation, we have these toilets or something like that, but no water. I just don't know. What does the water go with the sanitation? Or they get the thing? I don't know what they're being provided. Thank you, Chair. That's all I have.
Honourable Miller.
Thank you, Chair. My colleague is wondering. The first one, I just wanted to ask, who is responsible for raising employees? And if he or she doesn't know this or have it, what needs to be done? And then the second one is, for your own information, what makes employees to move from one department to another? And then, you have talked about the change of agency. I just want to check the department so that we can look into this term, because you have talked about the last term. Some of the options that can deliver or not, because if the HOD used to be changed now in my mind, then that is a problem. Thank you.
Honorable Mashoka.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the Public Service Commission. I think the information that they shared with us is very important to us and everyone. And I wish to commend you for having a forward thinking in a sense that in your presentation you indicated that there has been a research and recommendation made to the department and now to prepare for the fifth calendar, because it can't take for granted that when the new MPs or ministers come, they will understand what has been taking place in the department. And we will commend you because you have included the research and recommendations for 2020, so that those ministers that were appointed can track and know where to go. I think it is important, and we appreciate that what you have recommended has also been fruit, in the sense that there has been instability of the HOD. But after your recommendations in the speed parliament, there are no changes according to the information that we are taking. And I think this is a job well done. I wish to ask some few questions, Honorable Chair, if you may allow me to do this. You have also made a very important recommendation around the issue of the labor capacity. You are saying that the succession planning, there should be a succession planning that is from Algar to strengthen the capacity of the state. I think this is a long-term planning for the OCAS. But what I want to check, what do we do at the moment with the current labor capacity, especially in the human resource, which leads to the labor being in position? And as we speak, we have a lot of vacancies, as we have indicated in your presentation, and you have made an example with the KPA 3 as an example to say that it's a problem and it needs focus. But we have come up with a recommendation for a long time. But at the present moment, what is it that we can do to urgently really turn around this issue of this lack of capacity, in particular in HR? And I think you have correctly indicated that the issue of unemployment in the country is high. And the president has made a call from the highest office to say that the issue of the business growth is a priority, as we have also indicated and alluded to. So what is it that we can do? Because if we correct the capacity in the HR, I think we can be in a position to fast track the issue of employment and filling those posts that are vacant, which lead to incapacity. And you have also indicated that, that there have been challenges in the department. You know, if like corruption or wrongdoing in the department, you find that the sanctions that are given do not match the wrongdoing. You find that those that have done well are getting sentences, you know. But what are the explanations from those departments? Why is that happening? Can you get an explanation from the department to do that comparison to say that this one has done a severe, you know, wrongdoing, but why getting a light sentence, something like that? Also around the issue of the turnover in the department. I want to know how many departments have the retention strategy and are they in operational using it? And following on that one, because we are talking about medium term by the policy statement here, I want to concentrate on the policy statement. I would really wish to hear the comments of the Public Service Commission, because we have done a lot of research around the circular methods that you presented before us here, even around the issue of unemployment that we have been indicating the audience there. Here, there is an indication here that talk about the phase on personal expansion and review of the revenue, according to the media term, but also statement. And what they are saying to contain compensation by the treasurer, that means people's account will be frozen for the next 2 years. Any increase in personnel will be funded from existing allocation. And the National Treasury, the Department of Economic Monitoring and Evaluation, the Department of Public Services Administration, and officials from other departments will conduct a review over the next year to consider the permanent withdrawal funded vacancies. What I want to take here is to say, according to the public, what is the comment of the public commission on this particular matter? One is asking that because there are different views around what the treasurer has pronounced in this policy statement. Contrary has got some views, NUMSA has got some views around the particular matter of the withdrawal of the funded court. You know. And we have also raised a concern around the issue of the implication on the job or the job opportunity on the withdrawal of them. So one was the request or the comment of the commission on this particular matter. What is their view? Just to indicate their view on this particular matter. And also, you know, this issue of because we are not looking it for now and for long term. But one wants to understand whether departments, they do have the best strategy to attract to attract or retain the public servants, you know. Do they have? Because they have just a retention strategy, but the attraction of the best suitable candidates to the public service, whether they really do have. And I think my colleague, when I move forward on the issue of the performance contract, I think my colleague has touched on it, because it's a concern to all of us. And what we want to check at the current juncture in the fifth parliament, whether all the departments have the performance contract now. If I say performance contract, sign performance contract. And if they are not there, what are the reasons for not saying? What are the implications if there are no performance contracts? And also the implications of late submission of performance agreement around issue of service delivery. What does this mean to us and the service delivery? And is there any consequence on the agencies who fail to submit performance agreements on the time? Or have they had it even before to say that this one has been charged for failing to submit on the time? And our concern, Commissioner, is the fact that what you have said and presented before us, the service delivery process took also to the expenditure vis-à-vis performance. I'm just asking that because I will request you, maybe, I don't know whether it's within your jurisdiction, to really do the investigation on the Department of Energy. Because you talk about the electricity also as part of service delivery. If you look at the budget for 2013-2014 for Department of Energy, that was responsible for service delivery in the ESCOM area of jurisdiction, supply area. At the moment, we are facing service delivery protests around the issue of electricity, not only on the housing cut. If my position is getting done, it will be sound like rhetoric, because I would always say, because as I left, they will still do it. There were projects that were committed by the Department of Energy through ESCOM to the community for 2013-2014. Come 2013-2014, half of those projects were done, and they were not completed. And according to the Division of Revenue Act, the budget for 2014, 2015, there was also a budget for this current financial year. And fortunately, I got a meeting with all the stakeholders, energy, ESCOM, municipality, COCA, you know, in my position, to say, can you explain, because these processes are continuing. What happened to the budget, because it was committed and reported to the community. When they indicated the energy, they said they ran short of funds while they were busy on the 2013, 2014 budget. And this current financial year, 2014, 2015, the budget for now also is going to cover the projects that were not paid in 2013, 2014. As a result, in 2014, 2015, nothing is going to kick off around the issue of electrification. So, because in the Dora, it seems, you know, it is reflective, and it doesn't make sense to the community and ourselves as politicians to say, how come this is this current financial year, nothing is going to be done, and now the budget for the current year is being paid the previous year, and even then, those budgets for 2013 and 2014 that were related are not going to be done. It is our request that maybe if we can get an investigation on that to say what happened in the previous budget, because people are going to use 2013, 2014 allocation for Umlarazi in the area supplied by airport. And in this current financial year, do we have committed budget that is going to do electrification projects in those areas? So because I think the work that they are doing really is recommended, it is very assisting us as politicians and the community. Because we don't understand what sometimes is happening. Maybe this issue of the failure of the government contract, because we can't hold somebody accountable, you know, to say, because they signed 1, 2, 3. And this money we don't know, and the community is there. They said they want answer. What is happening to this 2014, 2015 budget? Because they said nothing is going to kick off. So this is our request, and we really appreciate this report and also your forward thinking. I think to have a commission like this, it will assist to empower us also as politicians. And last issue, what are the reasons for the departments who had 100% compliance in 2013 to invest now, like the Department of Public Works and the others, and we can't prove that we're going to 100% as we have indicated. Because I don't think it would be correct that now you say 100% compliance and then you reverse. In particular, as we have indicated, that there were no changes. There were no change of head of department in the current chamber. We would have understood if there were change of staff. But now because we have changed staff, what is this is the reason of the project? I will point now that maybe because I was just closing and writing, I will make some comeback if you allow me to say.
Honorable
Chair,
thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to thank the Commission for the useful information that you have given us. I really feel empowered. And I just want you to know that if not only you, Minister, who may not know, even me here, I do not know most of the things that you have highlighted, and thank you very much. And it's very good that you have actually reminded us of your mandate. I think it was important. And because as far as I'm concerned, you have done your work. And it's up to us now. What I'm requesting is that you give us your numbers so that we can rigorously interact with you item by item. I just want to give myself time to follow these things very closely. And I can assure you that this committee is the outstanding committee on appropriation in the fifth parliament where the head of state has pronounced unequivocally that there must be radical change. And our mandate as this commission is to deal with the allocation, to give money to those who are deserving, to penalize those who don't work, but we also, because we are, especially from the ANC, we are caring leadership, we'll also make sure that when we deal with those issues, the grass does not suffer. I was interested in this issue of you. I had not actually, I'd like to read the constitution so much, but I had not yet paid my attention to the fact that you are dealing with the civil service in the National Assembly and legislatures. But I'm worried, are you not finding a way of dealing with those in the municipality? Because to me, you know, delivery is at the local sphere. And I'm not convinced that in that sphere, people are necessarily better committed than in the other spheres, or better equipped. There is a lot of lack of knowledge. There is also this feeling that, you know, maybe the public service doesn't see us. I think they've got a space to play, you know. So I would like to find a way of closing that. With the civil servant who, you know, I've listened to the whole input. There is one thing that I have. They are people who love not to comply with the law. That is what I have here. And I think we are members of parliament here. We've got power to deal with issues like that. We don't worry. We'll handle it as long as you give us the information. That will be attended to. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one or two comments. That's one small area which is but also important area that you commented on is the issue of poor management of records. You know, in the age of technology, it's quite unthinkable that our department would still be getting in this regard. One would want to understand, are we lagging behind as a government in terms of using IT? Because I think that we should be going ahead with that and only use paper as the hub. So just to make us understand that, because I also know that there is an IT agency with the government which deals with that area. But what's going on? I can't recall his name. But there is one. When you talk about vulnerability to hunger, that makes me understand the reading of that. That's like, is it showing a decline in vulnerability? Is that what it means? Am I reading it correctly? From 23.8 in terms of households and individuals, that is 29.3 to 11.4, 13.4 respectively. Government is doing in that regard. Although, of course, and of course, if those are percentages that represent the percentages and so on, if you could explain that. I know that about 2 years ago, there was a report which says that South Africans are wasting 9 million tons of food a year. So that says to us, those who have it in abundance and those who don't have, just don't know when that is going to come from. And so it calls for the issue is not so much lack of food security. The issue is more on distribution of available food. If you could comment on that. The issue of performance, people could look at it from not just a person in the heads of departments and then say, well, you have signed your performance contract according to what you see, you have done well. Do we affect the whole department? Because that makes sense to me, and perhaps it would encourage heads of departments to really play their part. If a person is affected, if a head of department is affected in terms of the performance of the whole department, from the frontline staff right up to the top, and on the basis of that, and because that also would tell us whether we are delivering services and we are delivering quality services. So when we say we are performing above average, and therefore we are saying heads of departments are doing well, and if we give them performance well, they should say to us, we should be able to limit service delivery projects. I heard you have the comment as well that the issue is not so much lack of delivery of services in some instances. In some instances, it's the quality that makes people complain. And so I think we need to then check. If we evaluate heads of department, what are we evaluating? Themselves and their offices, or the whole department right up down. And if that is not the case, then I think one of the members said, maybe we need to change the way we evaluate the heads of department. I think that's the point. But perhaps you explain then better to us or at least understand. The area of vacancy, I think one of you reminded us that the president in the fourth administration called for the filling of all vacant five posts. Well, the president has been advised by the head of the department who must do that. Treasury is now saying we fill those posts. And probably they are correct. Because clearly people are submitting to Treasury human resource requirements, but in some instances they can't require those tools. They attach funds, but they don't appoint.
Yeah.
Meaning they don't think that those tools. And the question that must be posed is why to heads of departments, let me generalize, senior management, create posts which they don't need. And perhaps Treasury must respond at some point, because we would like to hear from National Treasury whether at the end of the financial year, rollovers are requested because these posts have been funded but not filled. If rollovers have not been requested in that regard, what has happened to them? How do they report? What do they report to yourself, potential Treasury? How do they spend money that was supposed to fund one body? Does it mean that we need to do a complete review of human resource management requirements in the department? So that we know what we need and what we don't need, and therefore find that which we need and completely close down what we don't need. The one other I don't expect to hear is an answer which says that we don't have seats, and therefore that's why I hold a line there. and I tell you why it is. I always argue that 30 years down the line, State Department can't lament like the private sector that they are not skilled. Because as government, we have a responsibility to create skills that we need as government. We have Palama, we must answer the question why, what is Palama doing? I'm certain that many departments have good relationships with our universities. Why are we not using those institutions to create the skills that we need? We are sitting with huge numbers of youth who are qualified from universities, who are qualified from FPTs, from other vocational schools, where technical skills are needed. And we can't continue to say that the reason why we're not feeling hope, funded hope, is because we don't have skills. Government can't give that excuse anymore. So it's an area that we must focus on, because indeed, as you correctly say, and as the NDC says, we must create a capable developmental state which cannot happen by chance. So, PSCC is enlighten us on that. National Treasury, please enlighten us on what happened to the funds, because quota funded. And if this makes it, the minister say correctly, no, I'm not funding quotes that have actually taken. And so when our the other stakeholders say, but when the minister says that we are not funding, continuing to fund the perpetual vacant funded post, we must then be able to explain to those who are complaining about that, to say, no, but we are making money sit somewhere away. It is not required to see them, therefore it's not being used efficiently. We could use this money to improve service giver, rather than just make the money on a code that is not valid. And this has been going on for a good couple of years. So those are areas that I think we need to keep our head. Thank you. Honorable question.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I just love the last point that you made. And I would like to ask you, Chair, if you could find a way of asking Treasury to actually come up with a real figures of people who are definitely empowered on budgeting skills in the department. Because it's no use of us assuming that people know how to budget. So at times, it's not a question that people don't want to budget correctly. Because from there, we can conclude that if they do have the budgetary skills, it means they purposely create posts that they don't need. And two, I would like the total of posts that have been budgeted and not filled, and the total amount, and without actually negotiating with those departments, move that money for women's projects in the Department of Small Business. Thank you.
Yes, please respond. National Treasury, make yourselves available to respond. Budget Office, as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. That is indeed a mouthful. I know Ted is looking like a doctor because we've been taking notes periodically. But just to say, Chairperson, we really appreciate the comments and questions. we have requested my Commissioner Elvin to deal largely with management practice related questions and coming to deal with research questions. I'd just like to make a few comments in response. First of all, Honorable Shofet Chole, thank you for understanding the context within which we first reflected back to yourselves as lawmakers what our mandate is, because they lie what guided us largely in terms of responding to the request of the committee. But to be precise, the legal framework as it stands now restricts us from overseeing municipalities. You would be aware, as one of the oldest serving members of this old house, that there have been several attempts by the DPSA ministry to try and look at the concept in terms of the legislative framework of a one public service. I know that those attempts are still somewhere in the pipeline, but as it stands, our oversight is restricted by the Public Service Act, which restricts us in the national and provincial sphere. The same applies to Honorable Madropa in respect of ESCOM. As it stands, much as in the Constitution, it says the value that underpins public administration also should inform bodies such as ESCOM. In terms of our oversight, we would be restricted only to looking at what the Department of Energy is doing, what the Department of Public Enterprises is doing in its oversight of those entities. So it is a bit restricted as it says. In respect of municipalities, Honorable Chole, what is a huge area of oversight. What other countries such as Mauritius have done is that they have both a body like ourselves and a commission that just is dedicated to municipalities. Now you can imagine Mauritius as small as it is, when it has dedicated a body, that shows the magnitude of the challenge of that oversight. But how we have dealt with the issue of the multiplicity of bodies is that in under one body they would have one that's dedicated to the municipalities and another that's dedicated to what they call uniformed officials, which would be the producer of bodies. So perhaps we could look at presentations, but that there should be constitutional oversight of these major municipalities, there is no doubt about it. Just to make a comment also, Chair, what you asked about the uptake of information technology in the poor management of records and the role of the state IT agency, I would like to say there are islands of excellence which unfortunately are not permeating across the system. I would like to believe that in the oversight of CETA, there needs to be a rigorous rethink of their role away from just being a procurement, IT procurement body, but being a body that really pushes the boundaries across the system in terms of IT uptake. I think for now we are very far from that. One last comment before I leave over to my colleagues to do their specific areas is around the whole area of performance assessment and the performance management performance agreement of heads of departments. Because they are the mandarins of the public service, yes, we have to make sure that the department as a whole do this, but because they are the mandarins of the public service, it becomes critical that they actually set the tone. Now, in our recommendations of the Public Service Commission, in the NDP, in Chapter 13, we made a recommendation of a head of the public service. Now, there is an uptake of this concept, as the presidency,
And that they have now recommended that they are looking at making sure that the secretary to cabinet in his capacity as chair of Portland actually is given the responsibility of making sure that this happens. Because we realize that sometimes the students, the academic, because DGs are the strategic, primary strategic advisor and support to minister, you almost need another person that assists the minister at the level of administration of this process. So going forward, the cabinet secretary and the chair of FOSAC has been given the responsibility of making sure that ministers are giving this support to sign and to draft and sign performance management contracts with DGs. Actually, it makes sense because it should now follow with the ministers now signing performance contracts with the president. It should then actually follow that a central coordinating body like that will make it easy to ensure that those are done. Some of the questions you've asked us, such as how many departments have retention strategies, may require us to go back and finish this information to your hotel outside this forum rather than being able to respond immediately. Commissioner Lulu is going to also talk similarly in terms of how many are actually having strategies to attract and retain public talent. All of those might have to come back. Among the many things that Commissioner Lulu is going to talk about, of course, is this issue of vacancies. That's to say one hope that in implementing it though, there is a rigor in looking closely at the various regions and providing departments with tools of ensuring that where they've been placed, there may not be slight unique circumstances and but otherwise we think that the suggestion under the circumstances may not be a bad one. Commissioner Lulu?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I will just respond to all human resource management issues only. But before I do that, honorable members, I wanted to repeat the fact that these issues that we are highlighting here are, in fact, mostly issues of non-compliance, are not as a result of lack of legislative framework. The legislative frameworks are there. The Public Service Act is very clear. The Public Service Regulations is very clear. The Department of Public Service and Administration has done a lot of work in terms of the directives that they issued, the regulations, even amended some of the regulations to make sure that departments are not hindered by the regulations. They can be able to do their work. But the issue that is coming out strongly here is the lack of compliance from the side of departments. Parliament has done a lot of work in terms of passing these pieces of legislation to make sure that departments can be able to work. So we are not going to put the blame at the door of Parliament at all, because we have the legislative framework. The DSA has pushed a lot of directives, but the departments are not compliant in terms of this. And we are happy because and work with Parliament. Parliament is able to call any department that is non-compliant and make them account. But our role is just to come to Parliament as our employer and say, Parliament, this is what we are finding. We are just presenting findings here. Although we try to work hand in hand with the departments and talk to them, because even these reports that we are referring to here, it's not about reports that we are just running to Parliament like children and say, no, this is what they are doing. No, we have taken them through these departments. We have gone from ministry to ministry to actually present this department, I mean this report, to them. To say, this is what we are finding. Before we even come to Parliament has been called us to actually, and we have tabled this report, but they have been called us to say, okay, come, we want to question you on this report. But I want to say that Parliament has a responsibility now to follow up on this demand. I just want to compare with the Honourable Member that said the issue of members acting as the HOD, that a person is acting, is no excuse for the person not to sign the common contract. Because when you are acting, you are given a responsibility. Actually, you are paid an acting allowance for doing that work. So why don't you correct and say, this is why I'm still acting, this is what I will be doing, this is what I will be assessed on. But it goes back to what I said earlier on, the level of non-compliance, because they are supposed to sign. The member also indicated the issue of inspections that sometimes we need to do unannounced. We do that, Honourable Member. Sometimes we go on unannounced inspections. Even when we do the investigations, I remember recently we were doing an investigation in the Department of Transport. We just moved in there without telling them. And we said once HR, we are investigating this. But fortunately, that investigation was commissioned by the minister, herself. And she said, in my department, I see this and this and this. Get one and pass for me. And I think that should commend it. Because it's not us moving in unannounced because we heard or we know that there's something happening. Minister Pemper said, there are a lot of things that are happening here, but I need a document so that I can be able to act. We went there unannounced, and they were shocked when we got into HR and said, we want the whole document from here. So, Honourable Member, please know that we are doing what you are saying, and thank you for raising it, because I mean you are actually, you know, empowering us even more that we need to continue. The issue of sanctions, Honourable Member, you said maybe there is a need to standardize sanctions. I want to say that while you are correct in saying that, you think I feel the same, but it will be very difficult to do it. Because when you take a person through a disciplinary process, because sanctions come out of a disciplinary process, and it's not done by one disciplinary committee. It gets collected by various disciplinary committees in various departments, in different departments. And there are different merits in any case. We may do the same thing, but we find that there are differences in the manner in which we did or we committed that offense. Maybe it's a regular driving of a government vehicle, but maybe I have given a trip authority, I have an authorization to drive. But on the other side, one person would not even have that authorization to drive. So the sanction will be different. So it's something that DPSA should look at. We take this advice to say how can they come up with a proposal to make sure that if offenses are the same, at least the session should be the same. Member also commented on the Investment Management and Development System, and he actually spoke on issues of the fact that it should be used as a developmental tool as well. When they get appointed in the position, especially in the senior management service, they go for a competency assessment just to check how well they are doing in core management competencies. If they find that there are weaknesses, they actually take those and put them in their performance and development plan so that when they take them for training and development, they can actually develop them in those areas. But at the same time, the issue of personal management and development assistance is an issue that we are discussing with the public service. Just last week, we had a round table. We called a certain department. We had left it down because we are getting a lot of differences around this area of government money. Some departments, some employees in the public service are using the performance management and development system as a money-making tool, not necessarily a tool that will ensure that the department delivers. It's a tool for somebody to get a 13th check or a 14th check or more money, progression and getting a bonus. But they don't look at the achievement of the department. And I think there is misalignment in terms of what the department seeks to achieve and what these different contracts seek to achieve towards making sure that the department delivers. I think it's something that we are dealing with, and we have made proposals in that roundtable. We call it even PSA to be part of that roundtable, so that they can go back and see if they cannot revisit this system and make sure that it addresses these gaps that we often see. Because you see a department that is non-performing on its side, and on this side you see officials that are getting bonuses. And it's very difficult to explain why that is happening. The member, I agree with the member on the issue of early retirement for those that are sick. You know, keeping an employee who cannot perform, because a department is not a hospital where you can keep all your sick people. Because even in a hospital, you either die or get well. You cannot be kept there, because a hospital is not a hospital. You are kept there to get well. So if this person is sick and can't deliver, the department must find a way of making sure that the person with dignity gets retired. And it's something that we're really fighting with the health risk officers. We even called them in our office and said, what is the rationale of you analyzing papers and say this person you are not recommending? And you are not looking at patients at this person. You don't see. You are just looking at the report and say, yeah, according to this report, this person cannot not speak. Or that sick that he or she can take an early retirement on grounds of his ill health. But the doctor has said this person is sick, but you are sitting in an office somewhere and you are seeing. So we were like, talking to them to say we need to find a way. And again, it's an issue of non-compliance from the department, because that point is very big. It says, have this cost department recommend. The department must investigate and look at the person, visit the person, see if this person can work or not work. Take into consideration the report of the resident office. But sometimes they just got busy, they don't do that, they say, yeah, the health risk officer says they recommend that this person can still work. And they all get shocked when they're told that, no, by the way, that employee has died. The issue of the vetting of employees, member asked which agency or which entity is dealing with this. The state security agency is responsible for the vetting of all employees in the public service. In terms of the national vetting, vetting strategy of the country, which was approved by cabinet in 2006. So this responsibility is given to that entity. The public service commission has called that entity. We called them in our offices and we said, what is going on? Departments are complaining that this thing of getting is not moving from your offices. They said they all have a lack of capacity, the volume of work, they can't cope with the volume of work, with the vetting that they need to do. Sometimes they're busy, restructuring their own agency, and sometimes it's difficult for them to do the work as quickly as it is required. But sometimes it's departments themselves. I will often go back to them. Department, if one employee has been vetted in this department, but applies for a post in another department in the period in which the security clearance is still valid, why vet again? Because that's what they do. They revert. A person moves from Cocta to Home Affairs. That is one employer, the public service. You move from one particular department to the other. If the certificate is still valid, that's 5 years to keep. You don't have to do it again, but lo and behold, they do it again. So, meaning that it's not the blame cannot be put at the door of the state security agents only. The departments are also doing wrong things as well, because they're not supposed to live there. Same as the factual verification of qualifications. It's done by South African Qualifications Authority. That is the body that is assigned by cabinet to take the responsibility of the verification of qualifications. Because it's not enough for a person to say, I have a BA degree and only believe the person. You can't believe anybody. People dream these things. They dream to have a BA degree, but it's not there. That's why we have to check whether it is there, or is the person like dreaming, or the people that she was with a crash have now have DAs. If I was with them as clerk by now, I would have a DA by now. It doesn't work like that. So that's why we check, we thought department to check these qualifications. Do not start a bogus, they just, you know, manufactured down the road by somebody who wants to, you know, open job opportunities for others. So they come up with a certificate, and they apply for a job, they submit the certificate. That's why we are saying, cabinet, sir, these certificates must be verified. But in fact, we are actually charging a fee for the service, it's not a free service. The government will say to us, no, we submitted to SAQA, we are still waiting, they are not giving us. And we are saying to them, but we need to sign a service level agreement with SAQA. They need to deliver at the time you want them to deliver. You can't wait for them, especially if you say for a friend. So sometimes they just wait. Yeah, sometimes, the same thing that I am mentioning with the vetting. If a qualification has been verified in one department, and there is a certificate from SAQA, that this certificate has been verified and this person applies in another department, they want to do it again. Why they are doing it is something that we are beginning to ask them. Why do you unless a person has a new qualification that was never verified before, that then is when they have to check even that one. In fact, in the process they are wasting money. I want to say this. Because they pay for a service, the person has a verification from SAQA that indeed you have your BA from the University of Cape Town. But when you move to another department, they still want to know the same thing and pay another fee for the same thing. So these delays sometimes are self-created by departments. And we are really bold to say this before the committee that some of the things are not supposed to be happening. The issue of the assessment of HOD, honorable members, is an issue between the principal of the HOD and the HOD. Ministers, they sign with ministers, and the minister is supposed to sit and do the assessment with the HOD. And after they do that, in the past, I think in the previous year, Commissioner, in the previous year, the Public Service Commission was responsible for the moderation. We were chairing the moderation. And we cannot chair a moderation where the process of assessment has happened. And if it doesn't happen, we sit and say, yes, we are ready as well. When are you going to be ready? Fortunately for us, for the HOD, they find their agreement with us. We are able to analyze those agreements. We even know which HODs can be evaluated at a certain period. But when we go back to the department and say, HOD ABC are ready for assessment, please submit documents so that we can assess. We find that the departments are not ready, the assessment doesn't happen between the minister and the HOD. And our mandate doesn't stretch to the monitoring of ministers. We all monitor ministers. If ministers are paid to sign, we just take it as a reason as well, because we ask departments, why did you not submit? Say no, they're still sitting in the minister's office, the minister didn't sign. Then we leave it at that point. And then it becomes a report for us to balance. Because we don't have the money to question the minister. The issue of the succession planning, we are having a conference, I hope a commissioner Amanda would mention that because she is the driver of that program with the developmental state conference, actually it's not an international conference, where we will be discussing this issue. Because in the public service, there is no succession planning. You apply for the post all the time. Hence, other people are doing funny things. Today you are a director. Next week you are a chief director if you are black and you get the post. And the people that are internally, there's a high turnover rate of officials moving from one department to the other because I cannot move from where I'm sitting in one department, so I better apply in another department. It's not the right thing, but it is happening. The issue of the filling of vacancies, I'll just talk briefly about the reasons why they say they are not filling vacancies. Lack of vacancies, the delays in the capturing of applications within their HR department, because there is no capacity there, they have very few people. And the reason for this, in the country with high rate of unemployment, you advertise one post and you get about 10,000 applications. The recruitment and selection process is a very difficult process. You need to capture all those applications. You can't just say, oh, I want only four people here to interview. I must just not capture these applications. Just say four out of that 10,000. You can't do that. But other people will challenge you and say, I want the reasons why I was not shortlisted and interviewed. So that's why you need to capture all 10,000. And it takes time. Hence the delays we see in vacancies. And the sample verification, the vetting, the interviewing process, the unavailability of the panel to interview, and sometimes the candidates themselves. Since it is a decision process, if I am called for an interview and I am sick, I cannot attend. They just send a message to the department, yes, you called me for an interview, I can't come on this week. That means the doctor will have to wait for that person to get well next week so that he or she can come to the interview. Those are the delays that are happening with the recruitment process. This I want to coin it with the freeze of both, the withdrawal of the funded post that one member is. I'm not really, personally, we haven't discussed it in the commission, but personally I'm not in favor of it in hold. I'll tell them why. These departments, they need this post. Some of the departments cannot deliver without this post. And if they get problem, then it means a certain deliver will suffer. But at the same time, I agree that you, as a department, you cannot sit for a vacancy for 4 years. So that there are such cases where a department says, this post has been vacant for 4 years. But it means as a department, you don't need it. You can't keep it, the money must be taken away and the put where it is needed. But really, really, the department would not be that severe if they can be able to keep the temple that long. Retention strategies. There are departments that have funny retention strategies. Where you find that the retention strategy only talks to issues of counter offers. That if one resigns, gets a post airport, then it's only when. It's not a strategy that is proactive. It looks at a person who wants to go and say, okay, you going, yes, I'm going, okay, hey, God's going to give you two notices up. I don't believe that is a good strategy. They need to develop a strategy that is proactive, that will make sure that they return only scarce and required skills. Sometimes they have to retain people that would really need to be released and go. People who are not even performing at a level where one would believe that they need to be kept. Actually, those people should be fired instead of being retained. So there are weaknesses in some of the 10 skills strategies that we've seen. But we haven't seen all of them. I must admit to the point that we've seen for some departments, but not in all departments. The performance contracts are not only for HOD. They are also for other gaps in the department, but the third part is that if the HOD doesn't stretch the tone at the top, other officials down there won't find also. Because the HOD cannot actually discipline those that have not signed the contract, because they will know that you yourself and the HOD, you haven't signed. You cannot come and start me for not signing me and ask me when yourself you have not signed. Yes, I think my issues, I wanted to talk on the past administration management bill, but the commissioner has spoken to it to say it's a bill that is before Parliament. But that bill, the issue of the single public service, as it stands now, I think it has been taken out. There will no longer be that interpretation of the local sphere of government in that bill as it stands. Unless members in Parliament decide to change it again, I do not know. Thank you so much,
members. Thank you so much. Could you tell us the rationale of why these 12 departments? The main reason why we have, as originally indicated by Commissioner Ndumande, we planted these departments previously. We just wanted to basically establish trends. So there was not a specific reason for excluding any of the suggested departments. The other challenge is also that in terms of obtaining the information, because not all of this information is THC information. So the departments that we've already dealt with for the last 2 weeks, 2 years, sorry, we've established a relationship with them, so it's easier to get the information. That's still being honest. So, but I think in terms of if a request comes through and if there's a specific department that you want us to include, I'm sure you can include it in the request or the invitation, and we will ensure that we do so. In terms of the norm of expenditure, the 41.66% is a national treasury requirement. It is a norm that was established and we just use it basically as a benchmark. The decline in owning of households, the main reason there is the quality of the houses that has deteriorated and therefore has an effect in terms of people owning the houses. Partially owned houses are houses that the household receives a subsidy. That's the difference in terms of that. I'm just trying to catch the ear. In terms of expenditure versus the performance, the comment also raised the, with the decision to reduce the use of consultants. We've seen that previously departments would outsource the development of a strategic plan or annual performance plan, and now that that's phasing out, you need to use the in-house capacity, and that might be a reason why it has an impact on the quality of strategic plans and annual performance plans, especially the setting of targets that we have been seeing, because there was also no transfer of skills in terms of working with that service provider that previously provided that service. The issue of poor record management, Commissioner Zavanda already dealt with that. We've noted that next time we will include the numbers with the percentages in all instances. In terms of strategic planning and making sure that people comply in the annual performance plan, with the MSEC, the AG, both of these agencies require an implementation plan or an action plan in terms of the areas that have been highlighted so that the departments can indicate what they were doing. The question of was the water provided with the sanitation? Yes. In terms of the investigation tested at the Department of Energy and the challenges that have been picked up, generally, there is a problem with integrated planning, even in-house integrated planning, where the operation or the core function of the department does not work with the finance section in terms of making sure that they actually fit together. Hence the recommendation that there should be costing for the implementation of an annual plan, because the core business says, this is what we need to do, this is the amount of projects that we will be implemented, but the projects are never costed. And then this is a budget that is available, but these two parts of the annual performance plan generally doesn't speak to each other. And in terms of strategic planning, the site analysis is also very poorly done in terms of making sure that the environment informs what will be achievable or not within which time frame. The access to the food, it's the percentages, yes, Honourable Chair, that we have highlighted there. Just to note that this survey is done on an annual basis, so it doesn't cover all areas. It's a sample of vulnerable areas that was identified by Chef SA. So it's not the total population of South Africa. It's a strata of a population, so a sample of a much bigger population, and that is why the percentages are so low.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just Commissioner Lulu has indicated something that I would have loved to share with the committee at the end, which is all of these issues, of course, we are revisiting them as the Public Service Commission. We as a conference seem to be building a capable, career-oriented and a professional public service to underpin a capable and a developmental state in South Africa. On the 11th to the 12th next week at St. George's Hotel, where we're calling all the different stakeholders, including organized labor, to say 20 years down the line, what assumptions did we make about the various frameworks that we have in place to have a capable and a professional public service? What have we learned? What are some of the things that we need to change? But in the context of the developmental state that is emphasized in Chapter 10 of the Constitution, as well as the National Development Plan, what are some of the practices that we need to strengthen going forward? What are the gaps? What are the new things that we need to do to truly develop a capable public service that will extend this stage, that will propel us to 2030? So we thought it is important to share this with the committee, and through you,
Chairperson, we would be honored also to have participation of this committee at that conference if possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Chairperson?
So regarding the funding for the Raven Post, generally there seems to be a reluctance on the side of departments to surrender the funds they have for the Raven Post, because the time through a violent process have these funds channeled to
other.
Just to say that in general, there's a general reluctance of departments to surrender the funding for the Raven Post because these funds have through a violent process be handled through other areas of their expenditure. There are some instances in which these violence are justified, like for example, Loco uses some of its second post money to fund schools in its forex in its extra account. Or for example, you have correctional services where they use some of this money to fund their student stipends. However, generally, departments don't want to hand over this money and rather engage in having to roll over into the next financial year, but this policy has to be approved by the Treasury Committee. There's also with the implementation of the expenditure, of nominal expenditure ceiling, it means that departments have to operate within the baseline that they have. And so they're not going to want to willingly hand over this money. And it's a difference from the past where we could engage in practices of adding additional resources over the baseline while the expenditure period is paying off. And so we see the Raven Post money sitting in the department.
Yes, Honorable Sheila, so I'm just about to ask you, what other person may say about this role of us? Can the department simply say, no, we are not giving the federal with this money back? And that's it?
No.
Honorable Mashova, you want to?
This was an agent from Honorable Sheila, because also I was having a concern how of department, because you said the others really they need that money and they motivate, but you can't just say I can't give to the treasury. And my challenge around this particular matter is the fact that our government has changed the approach and has a medium term expenditure framework to say that you have got 3 years, you know. Maybe if so that you cannot have the problem to say that they are kind of high now because we implement data. The first year you can budget for preparation and planning. And then the second year you implement full stop. That's why I don't understand this issue of department we did not spend for 3 years. You know, the money for making you. Whereas the medium term expenditure framework 3 years, this year you plan the following year. Even though you can have the people that are upset and other things, but you can't for 3 years. And the post is not true. I don't think we have to accept it like that from the department to make those decisions to say that no, the others were not there. We have for 3 years. You can plan little, press planning, implementation, you know. So I don't really buy that one. But honestly, the other thing, I don't know how can the public commission ask that. Because this issue of the performance contract is the part of that process. And I understand that compliance is not automatically service delivery. Compliance is not automatically service delivered. And I want to check what is the role of the public service committee whether when they do their checkup in the department, they go as far as seeing that is this compliance in line with the priorities of the service as we have outlined there? Is there anything service delivered in the particular compliance because you can comply according to the grace of the law and so on, but do not service delivery. I want to check whether they can go as far as they want to check that compliance, whether it is in line with the priority of the government. And the other thing, I don't know how can you say this, but no, you have to say the committee has this as another intent. I'm told that if a performance contract and the ministers have to sign between HOD minister signing the performance contract. You know, I'm just a politician. I have to say, I'm just a politician. I did not put CD actually when I get in touch. You know, maybe it started by so open, you know, to say I'm missing. Because of the work that I was doing in the community. Mm-hmm. Without, you know, putting CD forward. How do we expect actually the HOD has got qualifications, you know, that they have put forward and so on. And we are saying now the minister must scrutinize this performance agreement, you know, and sign, really alone. You would think it's a viable thing to do. If it is not, what recommendations can be put forward so that the minister can be assisted? Because really, I'm just a politician. I'm just a politician. I'm here because the community entrusted me. They did not look at 2 years ago and what qualifications I have. And now I come to down to a commission demanding work for qualifications, and I did, and then, you know, she will just say no, this thing that you are saying is not in line. And you don't have the happiness. Please, can you just come up with the money? That will really work around this issue of the government agreement, the contract.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to request maybe the our staff to actually maybe follow up with the commission on two things. One, if they can do a research on the number of police that have applied for, I don't know, Commissioner's Monday used a very English word, you say I'm Shangani and I come from the rural area, so I don't quite remember those big words. And the police who is sick and say I can't work, and then you said boarding, something like that. How many are they? We need a serious effect figure. 10 or 2 or 5. And how many have applied and how many have been refused and what were the reasons? And then with that information, then we can call this structure to come and appear before this honorable committee. Then we also need a precise number of HODs who have failed to sign an assessment and the number of years they failed, whether they got bonuses or not, the exact, I mean me and Sunny and yeah, so that we can call them. You know, we Honorable Dr. Mashote is very right. We don't have this big qualification. But you see, we have got the mandate by the people. And we understand it very clearly. So we are going to use our powers and our mandate to sort out South Africa. South Africa will be free. The Honorable President, His Excellency Jacob Zuma, President of the Republic, as there must be radical change. And this committee will make sure there is that radical change. What happened in the past, well, maybe there was some leeway, Treasury. There's some leeway. Now, we have got an act called the Money Bills Amendment Procedure
and related. You know, this is the best deal that I like, you know. And we're going to use it. What's the space? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely, we appreciate the openness
and the frankness that you are answering our questions. That's very much.
Yeah. That's right.
Power women. We appreciate that it helps us to be able not just to understand the issues, but also to understand what it is that the Parliament should be. And as committees of Parliament, we need to act from the position of information. So we appreciate that kind of question. And hope that we will be able to call upon you whenever we think we need information with regard to issues related to public service and the spending that is attached to it. We will let you know whenever we need you. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. Thank you so much for the comments and the comments that you made. Parliamentary Budget Office, thank you. Members of staff, thank you very much for the presence. Members of Parliament, and you will be looking forward to them. But before that, let me just remind you, tomorrow's meeting starts at 9 o'clock. But today, we will not be able to adopt minutes because we don't have such a quorum. We'll look into that matter tomorrow. I think that's what is up for the day. Thank you very much.
Long live the chair.
Thank you.